Hey everybody, Danielle here. Just popping in real quick. We've been having some trouble with some of our mics recently, and Tyler's mic was having a bit of a conniption. So I had to cut his track, but he did pick up enough on the rest of our mics to be mostly audible. Just if he gets really soft, which isn't common for him, you may not be able to completely make out what he says, and I apologize for that. But this was a really fun, although short episode. So please enjoy our review of Little Miss Sunshine. Everybody, welcome back to Bannerbox, a review podcast run by the team here at Mad Artists. Each week, we will be breaking down a different production, whether it's a movie, TV show, whatever we're feeling like. And this week, we watched one of my picks, Little Miss Sunshine. My name is Danielle, and here are the Mad Artists that I currently have with me, or coming back from the bathroom in just a second, to about break this down today.
What's up, everyone? It's Samuel.
Hello, it's your fan favorite, John.
And somewhere currently emptying his bladder is Tyler, and he will be here shortly. So we might be speedrunning this a little bit today. We have not had much time in our weekends lately. And so, you know, we're kind of squeezing podcasts in where we can because we really like doing it. And so we still want to make time for it. So this one might be a little bit shorter. Also, because this movie is another rated R movie, we're just going to mark this one E because this is going to be a hard one to talk about without cursing and quoting certain lines and all of that. So just be prepared for that as this episode continues. So I know, obviously, I'd seen it before. I put it in the hat. Had either of you guys seen it before?
I had neither seen nor heard of it.
I was going to say, this was never on my radar once.
What about you, Tyler, as you return from the bathroom?
What's good, everyone? Hi, I'm Tyler. I work here.
Well, I was just asking them. I know you haven't seen it before. Had you ever heard of this one?
No, not once.
Awesome. I'm so glad I got to introduce you guys to something new. This is one that I think I was shown actually by one of my exes. It was one of like his favorite movies, and he showed it to me, and I was like, this is a fantastic movie. And now I just love it. So this movie came out in 2006. It was directed by Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, written by Michael Arndt, and stars Steve Carell as Frank and Toni Collette as Cheryl. You can watch this on HBO Max or with a Hulu Premium subscription, or you can buy or rent it on Prime Video, YouTube, Vudu, Apple TV, and Google Play. The IMDb summary for this says, a family determined to get their young daughter into the finals of a beauty pageant take a cross-country trip in their VW bus. And to Samuel.
Alrighty, so we have a, I believe, husband and wife directing team, Jonathan Dayton and Valerie Faris, and this was their directorial debut.
What
they
a way
had
to
produced
start.
Documentaries, wow. But this was the first film that they directed.
Blessings.
Since then, they have directed three films, none of which I've heard of: Ruby Sparks, Battle of the Sexes, and Living with Yourself.
I've not heard of those either.
I've heard of Battle of the Sexes, but
that's it. Our writer, on the other hand, Michael Arndt, is the exact opposite.
He has done a ton
of stuff. That being said, this was actually his first screenplay he wrote by himself.
Wow.
But
that's dope.
If you've seen a Pixar movie since the year 2000,
yep.
He has worked on it.
Really?
He has done, he wasn't a main writer, but he has done story work on every single Pixar movie since 2003. So, the Cars movies, Toy Story 3, Toy Story 4, Incredibles and Incredibles 2, Onward, Up.
All the new ones,
every single one. The Good Dinosaur, all of them.
Yeah, that one was okay.
However, the screenplays he's written, apart from that, is he wrote Hunger Games, Catching Fire.
Okay.
Ooh, really?
My favorite of the Hunger Games films.
I love that one. That's also my favorite book, though.
He helped Larry Kasdan write The Force Awakens.
Oh. Well, he's allowed one misstep.
And it's currently filming, but he also wrote The Ballad of Songbirds and Snakes.
Oh, yes! That's the Hunger Games prequel.
Yep.
I read it. It's good.
Really?
Yes.
So that's Michael Arndt.
I need to finish the Hunger Games series. I saw the first one, and then I saw the second one.
Read the book. Don't watch the movie.
Honestly, for Mockingjay, read the book. Like,
the book
it's
incredible.
Not,
the movie's
kind of
sucked.
It's not even that they left anything out. It's just the tone was so lost in translation with the movie. That's really what it was.
It's one of the weirdest examples because they like they translated the book to the movie like word for word.
Yeah, like the like they didn't leave anything out. It was perfect. It was just that the tone,
it wasn't good.
Somehow the tone was just lost.
Did you like the first two though?
Yeah, oh, yeah. I loved the first two.
Well, the third movie, the tone of the third movie, it doesn't feel like the other.
No,
movie.
It feels completely.
It feels like its own thing. It yeah, it was not very good. Especially considering solid. Mockingjay was the best book.
I liked Catching Fire better, but I did like Mockingjay.
Mockingjay to me was the best of the books, but by and far the worst of the
Catching
movies.
Fire was a very interesting concept. I enjoyed it.
The Catching Fire movie is incredible.
Welcome to our Hunger Games podcast.
Tune in like a year when we end up getting to it.
Well, anyway, anyone have any overarching points that they want to address before we dive into the
I plot? Absolutely loved all the acting in this movie. It was incredible. Yeah. Everyone gave some incredible performances, truly.
Yeah.
And I'm here for it.
Yeah, it has a very distinct tone that at first I didn't catch. You know what I mean? Like, I was just kind of like feeling around in the darkness going like, I don't know where I am. Like, what's about to happen? Is someone going to hit me in the face? I don't know what's going to go on. And then once I started kind of like getting on for the ride, mm-hmm. I'm like, oh, okay, I get it now. Okay. And then once it clicked and I started getting it, which was, you know, maybe in the first 5-10 minutes of the show.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, okay. I think I know what we're getting out of this.
Yeah.
And I got exactly what I was expecting to. It was very, very nice. It was extremely pleasant. A well-balanced movie.
Yeah.
Right? It balanced the darker themes. I think it handled the darker themes.
Wonderful.
Really,
it handled them
really
beautifully. Yes.
Yeah, I really like how they approached a lot of the more difficult subject matter. With one glaring exception, and we will get to that.
Yeah.
We'll get to that.
You sounded like you had a thought. That's why I looked at you. If you don't have a thought, we can jump right in.
No,
this
movie, dare I say it, has become one of my favorites I've seen on the podcast.
Let's
really?
Go.
It has
wow.
I think it's definitely in top 10. I don't know if I'd give it top 5, but it is definitely top 10.
Wow. How about that?
I was so hoping that people would love it because I love this movie so much.
I was a big fan.
Well, I'm gonna go ahead and dive into the plot summary since we're short on time. Oh, I need one of you to help me plug this in really fast while I read. Can you plug in my computer? Thank you.
Technical difficulties.
Diving into the plot summary here. So, Cheryl Hoover is an overworked mother of two living in, what?
Which side is it on?
Other side. so, is an overworked mother of two living in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Her gay brother, Frank, is an unemployed scholar of Proust, I think is how they pronounce it in the movie, is temporarily living with the family after having attempted suicide. Cheryl's husband, Richard, is a type A personality, striving to build a career as a motivational speaker and life coach. Dwayne, Cheryl's son from a previous marriage, is a niche reading teenager who has taken a vow of silence until he can accomplish his dream of becoming a fighter pilot. Richard's foul-mouthed father, Edwin, recently evicted from a retirement home for snorting heroin, lives with the family.
As you do.
And Olive, the daughter of Richard and Cheryl and the youngest of the Hoover family, is an aspiring beauty queen who is coached by Edwin. That already sounds chaotic as hell. Olive learns she has qualified for the Little Miss Sunshine beauty pageant being held in Redondo Beach, California in 2 days. Richard, Cheryl, and Edwin want to support her, and Frank and Dwayne cannot be left alone, so the whole family goes. Because they have little money, they go on an 800-mile road trip in their yellow Volkswagen van, which can only end well. Family tensions play out along the way amidst the aging van's mechanical problems. When the van breaks down early on, the family learns that they must push the van until it is moving at about 20 miles per hour before it is put into gear, at which point they have to run up to the side door and jump in.
Let's go.
I'm assuming that every time they did that, the actors actually did that because it didn't look like stunt doubles at all. It looked like them doing it.
But it also was not going 20 miles.
Oh, of course
now.
It wasn't going
super,
20
super
miles
slow,
an hour.
But
no
it was
way.
Still, but yeah, that definitely looked real.
Yeah, like, and I was hoping they were going to put it in, like, the fun facts about that, and they didn't because I wanted to, like, find stuff about it, and that's disappointing, but it's okay. And I didn't have time to go searching, so, you know. If anyone wants to look that up, I'd appreciate it. Just because I'm curious how, like, what kind of practice they did or, like, how that all went safety-wise. And, like, if they just said screw it and were just like, whatever, if you get run over, you get run over. So later on, the van's horn starts honking unceasingly by itself to the dismay of Tyler, which leads to the
family. I don't know why that hurt me as much as it did.
That was painful for Tyler.
I couldn't handle that.
Which leads to the family being pulled over by a state trooper, which that scene...
Your boy Hank.
Oh my gosh. Yeah, that scene, we can't really get there yet, but that scene is incredible. Throughout the road trip, the family suffers numerous personal setbacks and discover their need for each other's support. Richard loses an important contract that would have jump-started his motivational business. Frank encounters the ex-boyfriend, who, in leaving him for an academic rival, had prompted his suicide attempt. Edwin dies from a heroin overdose, and the family has to smuggle his body out of the hospital. That scene, when I first watched this movie, I was like, wow, this movie will really go there. It will go to that place I don't think it's going to go and really let it all play out, and I'm obsessed with it. And then that led to the state trooper scene where he opens it up, there's a body, but no, he notices the porn that falls out of the back of the car, and he's just focused on that and not the body in the truck.
Let's go negligence.
Oh my gosh, that kills me. Every time I watch this movie, that scene kills me. During the final leg of the trip, Dwayne discovers that he is colorblind, meaning he cannot become a pilot. This prompts him to finally break his silence and shout his anger and disdain for his family, though apologizing after Olive calms him down with a hug. That is my favorite scene in this movie, hands down. I'm obsessed with it.
Yeah.
That is the epitome of a sibling relationship.
Especially that the first line that he says in the movie is fuck.
Yeah.
And it's like an hour and 10 minutes into the movie. No, we said this is a rated R podcast. I said that at the beginning, but you were in the bathroom.
Get wrecked.
No.
Oh, fuck, I'm sorry.
No, but that's his first line in the movie, and that is always the scene whenever I think of Little Miss Sunshine, that's the scene I think of, is him just running out and just screaming. And nothing makes me happier than the fact that after 9 months of not talking, it's the family member that comes up and comforts him with no words at all is what brings him out of it. And he's just like, okay.
Well, the thing that got me was a few scenes ago, the mom was crying and he wrote to her, go hug her.
And Olive read that as, well, this is how I comfort everybody.
And she just walked up to him and hugged him, and he's like, okay. And like that got me pretty good. I was like, wow,
it's
that's
such
actually
a,
gorgeous.
It's such a beautiful moment with the two of them. And I just, I love that
very
so much. Because we don't really get to see a whole lot of like just their relationship. And that pretty much tells you everything you need to know.
Right.
That like, yeah, okay, they're not probably super close because they have huge age gaps and like they're from different marriages. And so there is like a gap between them.
Oh, is that true?
No, Cheryl, she mentioned it at the beginning, but you were kind of like settling in and things like that. But she mentioned that that's why he screamed divorced at her is because
I thought he was referencing what they were yelling.
No. She is his biological mom. Richard is not his biological dad. Because what he had said in the beginning was, yeah, he went and visited his dad over the weekend.
Okay.
Yeah, so okay. He's from a different marriage. Then she married Richard and they had Olive.
I see.
Yeah.
I see.
So, like, there is a big gap, but I love that it still takes the time to show you that, like, relationship between the two of them. And it's just, it's so sweet. I love it. After a frantic race against the clock, the family arrives at the pageant hotel and are curtly told by a pageant organizer that they are a few minutes past the deadline.
Who I wanted to see thrown off of a building.
Especially...
that lady was the worst.
And then Kirby! Kirby is the MVP of the movie.
Yeah.
A sympathetic hired hand named Kirby instead offers to register Olive on his own time. And I love... He is just the most, like, real... employee. Like, he's sitting there and he's like, I mean, it's just 5 minutes. I can do it easily and I'm not working for these people. Like, he's very making it very clear he is not one of them. Mm-hmm. He's like, I'm just here. I thought this was going to be like a gig. I'm not doing it next year. I'm going to help you out. And I'm just like, this guy is cool. I love Kirby. So Olive prepares for the pageant, the family sees that the other contestants are slim, sexualized preteen girls with teased hair and capped teeth performing highly elaborate dance numbers with great panache. As Olive's turn to perform draws near, Richard and Dwayne realize that the amateur Olive is certain to be humiliated and, wanting to spare her feelings, run to the dressing room to talk her out of performing. Cheryl, however, insists that they let Olive be Olive, and Olive goes on stage. Olive's hitherto unseen dance routine that Edwin had taught her is revealed to be a striptease performed to a Roca Sound revamp of Rick James's Super Freak. Despite the other girls being over-sexualized, Olive's burlesque performance scandalizes and horrifies most of the audience and the organizers, who demand Olive be removed from the stage, even though she was wearing more clothes than most of the other girls. The members of the Hoover family join Olive on stage and dance alongside her to show their support in probably one of my favorite movie scenes of all time.
Yeah, that was a really, really good
one. I'm obsessed with that scene. It's so good. The family completes the dance to a shocked and silent audience, save for a biker dad, Kirby, and Ms. California, who cheer enthusiastically. Mm-hmm. I love that Ms. California is like, girl, this is awesome. Yeah. Like, yeah. I love that so much. The family is released from the hotel security office on the condition that Olive never enters a beauty pageant in California ever again.
Everyone's cool with it.
Everyone's good with it. Piling into the van with the horn still honking, they happily smash through the barrier of the hotel's toll booth and begin their trip home to Albuquerque.
Incredible.
And Little Miss Sunshine.
Aye, aye, aye.
It is a wild time, and I love it so much. So if this movie wasn't called Little Miss Sunshine, what will we call this movie?
700 Miles to Redondo.
Big Mr.
Okay.
Nighttime.
No! I hate that. That's terrible.
What?
No!
I you have to come back to me. These are too important for me to not think on.
I think I would just call it Running on Empty. That's the first thing that came to my brain.
Christmas Vacation.
No, that's a different movie.
Point Break.
No.
I don't know.
Sorry, if you hear a weird sound, that's me drinking out of my water bottle because it's not silent anymore, apparently.
I don't know. Oh God, I wasn't ready. I'm never ready. Road trip.
The movie. It's required to have a subtitle after Road Trip. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You're the worst. What did you say yours, John?
No, I'm thinking on. I'll eventually chime in with mine.
Okay, cool. We'll move on. Well, I went on Amazon. The general consensus by viewers is pretty good. 85% rated it 5 stars. Do y'all want to hear positive or negative first?
Negative. I want to see what people have. Negative.
Yeah. Okay. So this one is from Miss Josh Emmett, and it was earlier this year that this review was posted. And it's titled, all caps, Obvious Oscar Winner. I know that sounds positive, but just wait. I never like movies that win Oscars. They get them for how many times you can say F in a movie or can just be plain gross.
You can F yourself.
This is another one. I hope these people were acting. What? I think it is wrong to have a child in a movie with only bad things going on. I saw the name and thought, oh, I never saw this. It was supposed to be good. Glad I never paid to see it. No popcorn. 1 star.
Are you fucking dumb?
Yes. Yes.
I'm sorry. I can't stand people who are like that dumb. Why is the child in the movie with bad things happening? It's like, because the whole point of the bad things is to make the good things really nice.
Yeah, it's to show that bad things happen, but good things also happen.
Imagine captioning the picture.
And then the positive review is from Sasha Nealand. This was also earlier this year. And it's titled, Woohoo, This is America, Greatest Movie of All Time.
What?
That is also the first sentence of the review, so I'll skip past that. This is the quintessential American spirit. If you want to know the reason America is great, it's because we are all living our dreams. Never say die, never give up, solve it and move on. Stick together. Got your families back no matter who they are. This movie has it all. Great movie if you are trying to explain Americans to your depressed European friends.
What? That's the most patriotic review ever.
None of this makes any sense.
I wanted to grab a review, and when the positive review was this crackhead and the first negative review I saw was that crackhead, I was like, it has to be both of those.
That review made me feel like I was out of breath.
Like, most of the good reviews that I was seeing right off the bat were, like, essays about, like, everything. And I was like, I need a shorter review. And that was the first short review. And then all the negative reviews were pretty much saying all the same thing, which was, like, you're making pedophilia okay. And, like, all of these things that I don't agree with the movie. But they were just saying all of these things. And I was like, okay, I'm not gonna, you know, all of those are the same. So I pulled two that were a little bit different. As far as what awards this one won, it was nominated for both Best Motion Picture of the Year, and Abigail Breslin was nominated for Best Performance by a Supporting Actress.
She should have been.
Yes, and then it won Best Writing and an Original Screenplay and Best Performance by a Supporting Actor, which was Alan Arkin, who was the granddad.
That's amazing.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm. He won?
Yep.
That surprised me. I would have guessed either Steve Carell or Paul Dano.
Well, like, to this day, there was a fun fact I didn't write down, but every big member of this cast has now at least been nominated if they haven't won an Oscar, except for Paul Dano.
Paul Dano hasn't been nominated for an Oscar?
I don't think so.
But he's done so many good things.
I don't think he has.
That's wild.
Well, now on to our guessing game. What would you guys guess that this is rated critically on Rotten Tomatoes out of 100?
Oh, goodness.
On Rotten Tomatoes?
Mm-hmm.
Out of 100, I'd say 88.
Okay.
We'll give it a beefy 90.
Okay.
I mean, it's gotta be, I'm gonna go 92.
All right, well, you and John tied. It's 91. So I'm gonna give y'all both one because you're so close. And then audience score, also out of 100.
93.
Okay.
I think it's gonna be a little lower
because
of all the darker themes in there. I'm gonna shoot it at a solid 83.
I'm gonna say 74 for audience.
You guys are way off, Tyler. You win this one because it's the exact same score, 91. Easy. Exact Let's same go. Score.
Interesting.
That's my first time.
I was worried the darker themes would push away a lot of the audience from giving it high reviews.
No, it's the exact same score. So now IMDb out of 10.
9.
Just 9.0?
Yep.
Okay.
8.6.
Okay.
I'll give it a 9.1.
Samuel's the closest, but he's not very close. On IMDb, it's a little lower. It's a 7.8. Mm. A little lower on IMDb.
That's lame.
And I got my movie title.
Oh, okay.
It's Winning Isn't Everything.
Okay, yeah, we could have definitely said Winners and Losers for sure. That could have been a title.
Because it's...
Or the Nine Steps.
I tried to really come up with something creative for Nine Steps, but it just wasn't happening. And then just the whole Winners and Losers theme was just too potent. So I was like, winning isn't everything.
Yeah.
That was quaint.
So the budget for this movie, from what I could find, was $8 million. It made... Wow. $101
million. Look at that.
It made a ton of money.
Guys, we're in the wrong field. That's so much
money. So, some fun facts I found. So, the production crew made sure that Abigail Breslin really was listening to music in her headphones to keep her from hearing Alan Arkin's insane scenes.
Good.
The heroin that Grandpa snorts in the bathroom in the beginning of the movie is actually crushed up vitamin B tablets. Wow. So he's getting his vitamins. While filming in a convenience store in Santa Clarita, California, a Paul Dano lookalike walked in. Dano was late and unaccounted for, so everyone thought the lookalike was Dano.
What?
After he explained that he was not Dano, they took some pictures and sent him on his way.
That's hilarious.
That's funny.
Oh my gosh.
So this this movie, because of like financial issues, took like 5 years to make, and so because of that, the film when it finally came out was dedicated to Rebecca Anito, the 14-year-old niece of one of the producers who was killed in a traffic accident in 2005. But before that, she had appeared as an extra in some scenes at the restaurant and the convenience store.
That's horrible.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
The MC at the pageant is a parody of the official MC at the child beauty pageants, Tim Whitmer, who can be seen or heard in various child pageant documentaries. So they just took him and just parodied him for the movie.
Dreadful.
Cursed.
I hated every bit of him being on stage.
He was so cringe.
So cursed, and there were so many creepy undertones.
So creepy. The unpleasant character played by Greg Kinnear is called Richard Hoover. Dick Hoover is a synonym for cocksucker. They did that on purpose.
That's fantastic.
Amazing.
So in the commentary, the directors note that Greg Kinnear was really self-conscious about dancing because his wife made fun of his dance moves at their wedding.
Aww,
he was so self-conscious that he had requested the dance scene be taken out of the movie. Like, that's how self-conscious he was.
Which one was he?
He's the dad.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's so mean. Who would... I don't know. I'm mad at the wife now.
And get a divorce, Greg Kinnear.
That's not nice.
Unless it's just very playful teasing, but, like, you're also being goofy. Uh-huh. Like, you know, like don't make fun of someone when they're just expressing themselves.
He's
like, come on.
What do you mean about that?
So, if we were to recast, who would we play in this movie?
God, I've been thinking about this all since the movie started, and I do think that John would be the grandfather.
I could see John as the grandfather. It's a small part, so I don't want to put you in it, but you're Kirby, 100%. But I don't want to put you in that small of a part, but, I mean, it's so perfect.
Tyler's Richard.
I mean, Tyler, you could play Richard very well.
Thank you.
You could play him very well.
Tyler's Richard.
Samuel, I would love to either see as Dwayne or Frank.
Yeah.
I think you could kill literally whichever one of those you wanted.
I think from an acting perspective, I'd love to see him do Dwayne more because he's silent for most of the film, so it's all...
It's all like small.
I mean, I would take either one of those roles.
I think either of those you could body, 100%.
Yeah, I definitely agree. Honestly, I put you as Frank more than I put you as Frank. Not to say that you can't do it. I think you would play Frank really well, and I think you would
better
be
than me.
Very well.
Apparently.
That's literally what you said.
Yeah, but I didn't mean it like that.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you're fired.
I said she's better.
Get off the podcast.
I said she's better for the role. I'm not saying that she's like.
Does she can play that role better than me?
You're offended that you don't want to be a gay man who attempted suicide?
I'm very good at playing gay men.
I've
done it multiple times
before.
Well, too bad. I get to play the gay man.
College.
They put him as gay men several times in college.
Regularly.
In the dorm rooms, I played the
I played the gay man in the dorm
rooms. He almost choked
on
a burger in that scene.
Oh, yep. Yeah.
Yep.
No.
Oh, my God.
So what...
Stop it.
Roll.
So what would be the drinking game for this?
Oh, God. Finish, because it's one finisher drink, or is it one shot?
Yeah, give us the rules.
You gotta have, just take a drink, mm-hmm. You gotta have a shot, and then you gotta have a finisher drink.
And we only do one finisher drinks, right?
I would say, like, one, maybe two throughout the movie. So what
finisher drink when I can't watch what's on screen.
Well, I was gonna say you could finish your drink anytime there is a serious issue with the car, because it only happens twice.
And then drink every time. Did you already say drink?
No.
Drink every time she goes off to practice her routine.
Oh, that does happen. Oh, like
that happens like five or six
that
times.
That happens a few times during the movie. So what is the shot rule?
Or anytime anytime he writes on his pad would be another good drink one.
Ooh. Ooh, okay, so maybe every time he writes on his pad is take a drink every time she goes to, well, no, because that's too many shots. We can't do that. It's too many shots.
People would die.
People would die.
Every time Richard mentions his 9-step program.
No, God, you'd get so drunk so fast. That can't be the rule.
Is that not the point?
That can't be the rule. Oh, a shot rule. What would that be? Yeah, I really don't know. I'm trying to think.
Take a shot every time the grandpa does cocaine.
Because that only happens twice. Yeah. Okay.
Heroin?
Well, it is heroin, but whatever. Every time he snorts the drugs.
Whenever he snorts vitamin B. You may take a shot.
Favorite and least favorite moments from this one.
I can safely say that everything involving the pageant, I'm not going to get into detail, the pageant.
And like...
Well, let's talk about that really quick, just with you guys.
So I was... At first, I was like, okay, I like what the directors are doing. Because they're not really... I don't want to see any of that, and they're not showing it to me. They're just kind of doing...
Like, alluding to it, right. Nodding to it.
But then they started showing more of it, and I was like, I don't like this. I'm uncomfortable. I don't want to be here. I don't want to watch this. I don't like that this is put to film.
Like, I understand the artistic choice to do that, but
Well, I think the entire point is that it's to make you as uncomfortable as the family is watching.
Well,
it.
that's why Dwayne and
Dwayne and Frank, because they take one step in, they go, nope, this is fucked up,
I'm
and
not
they
watching
leave.
This.
Yeah,
I'm not watching this.
And I think that's the whole point that they're trying to make is like these things are fucked up, but no one, but still, it's happening for some reason, and we're just gonna keep letting it happen. And something else, I didn't write this down, but. They didn't, like, just ask random kids to come in and do this. All of these kids have done these in the past.
Which I respect.
All of the costumes they had were not given to them by the costumers. They were what they already had from past pageants. So, yeah, like, crazy. The directors did not put them in the skimpy outfits.
Here's the thing. I personally think that the creative team handled it damn near as well as they could.
Well, because they also didn't show too much of it.
They really didn't.
They could have shown way more, but the whole point wasn't to show a bunch of, like, long routines and stuff. It was to show glimpses of these, first off, far more professional and experienced, performers, as well as just how fucked up it all is. Yeah. Like, you know, and that was the entire point, is that they're taking these kids who have done these things before and showing everyone, like, what it actually is.
As opposed to a movie like Cuties,
which is disgusting. That is
I don't know that movie, nor do I want to.
It's a horrifying movie.
It's atrocious.
I didn't even see it. I'm not going anywhere near
it. I'm not going to see it, no.
I like my eyes being nice and virgin for that. Thank you very much.
No,
very
it's a disgusting movie about child pageantry.
I object to and despise child pageants with every fiber of my
being. As you should. They're disgusting.
It's so revolting, and it makes me so uncomfortable to the point where when they were doing the pageant scene, I didn't think it was, like I said, it's not a fault of the movie, because I think they did a really good job of handling it, but I legitimately couldn't watch. I'm like, I'm getting sick. Like, this is so abhorrent. And the amount of rage and disdain that I have for the people who allow their kids to do that, it grows to a point that actually, like, makes me forget myself for a second. I can't understand how you think this is acceptable.
What I really hope is that the parents that, like, you know, that put their kids through all of this, and then their kids got, like, you know, asked to come be in this movie, then watched the movie and were like, oh, maybe this is, like, a little creepy. Yeah. Like, maybe this is kind of, maybe I shouldn't put my kid in this.
Yeah.
I hope it changed their minds about, like, what it actually is. Because it's not, like, a fun, it's not a talent show. Mm-hmm. That's not what it is.
No, it's not.
A talent show is where you can get up in a nice conservative outfit and you sing a song or you do a dance or whatever. This is a gross thing where it's like, who's the prettiest kid and like, and it's can an also do impress. It's objectifying kids and being like, okay, which one is the best just product of its genes and like, and can do a cool spin while also wearing nothing. And it's like, this makes no sense and it's cursed and disgusting. Which was something I also thought was a very interesting thing that they chose to do with Olive, where, yeah, she's doing, like, this crazy, absurd, like, board, like sort of like a striptease thing, and she's still more conservatively dressed than all of the other people who are out there in, like, skimpy little bikinis and skirts that flop up in the air every time they take a step.
Absolutely.
And hers is like, a nice conservative top with just some shorts, and that's shocking everybody, and it's just, like, that's what honestly gets me the most about that scene is that she's not actually doing anything worse than what they just did at all. It's just because it's not painted as acceptable. That's what makes them all freak out.
Well, that's the thing, right? Is that the whole draw with the, let's say the draw, the whole reason why the other pageant contestants were handling themselves the way they were is because it was like this, not so subtle, like, I'm not being sexual, you know what I mean?
It was like, them trying to be coy
about it. Yeah, which steered into the innate sexuality as to what they're doing, which is why I was like, fuck you.
Yeah.
Whereas, on the opposite end with Olive,
she's being so upfront with it.
It's so overtly sexual and done poorly that it still was a little gross, but it was like, It was charming because of how wrong it was.
Because of how wrong it was, and the fact that, one, you also know that, like,
her granddad was like,
this is what's gonna win, is this kind of stuff, because he's into just, like, crazy shit. And he's training her, and he's like, yeah, this is what's gonna work. You're gonna win if you do this. And it's just, oh my gosh.
Where's your grandpa right now?
In the trunk of our car. Oh my gosh, it's so funny. But I thought they handled it really well, and that everything they did made sense. And so this is not, like, a slight on them at all, on the directors. And I think they did a good job of highlighting what's fucked up about these pageants without overexposing or exploiting these kids.
Yeah. So to jump back to answer the original question, in terms of favorite and least favorite.
Favorite and least favorite.
Least favorite, hands down, no questions asked, no cap, Batman. Would definitely be the pageant scene with the girls. I hated it.
Agree.
Yeah. But to be different, and to say something else that I did not like, the car horn. I don't know why it bothered me as much as it did. I guess it just hit home with car problems and me. that I was just like, I'm gonna have a panic attack. Not actually, but I didn't like it. Favorite scene, you can't. I mean, the scene of him being hugged by his sister.
Yeah, that whole freak out scene
where he starts talking, incredible.
I'm gonna go with Frank and Dwayne on the pier. That's my favorite scene.
That's a really good scene.
That's another really, really strong one.
My personal favorite scene is Frank and Richard's back and forth in the van.
Oh my gosh, the sarcasm where Frank
is just antagonizing him.
No charge?
That's great.
That's for free?
I love that. And especially because Cheryl is like, guys, stop. But then she, like, that's her brother, so she's like kind of laughing.
She's
actually entertained, and she kind of gives him like a little smack. Like, come on. Look,
because he keeps mentioning it over and over again, and it's funny to have someone just dig at, like, oh, your 9-step program? Yeah, this is great.
It's so funny.
I will say, quick honorable mention, favorite moment towards the beginning when I was still trying to figure out what this movie was trying to be. Why am I flanking on the names? Good lord. Frank was talking to Dwayne, excuse me. Frank's talking to Dwayne right before bed for the first night.
Oh, yeah.
And he's saying goodnight. And then he just wrote him a note saying, please don't kill yourself tonight, which I thought was like, okay, that's the nicest thing he said so far in the show. And he just looked at me and he's like, I'm not going to do that to you. And I was like,
not
oh,
on your
shit.
Watch, man. Absolutely not.
I was like, I really like that. That's so cool.
Yeah.
I love that.
And then I love the note of welcome to hell.
Yeah.
He's like, coming from you, that means a lot.
Exactly. Yeah.
No, there is something I forgot to mention, which is from my first first watch of this movie, I have been obsessed with the costuming choice for Frank. That he, for the whole movie, he is in all white with just these little brown, like, loafers.
Yep.
And to me, it's like he went through, like, a, like, you know, a death and a rebirth, and now he is just this blank slate of, like, being there as almost just like a sponge for all of the family's everything.
Yeah.
And that he just kind of like easily like takes it, almost a little bit like a Christ figure, where he's just sitting there taking all of it. And he's just like, you know, and I love the symbolism with him being in all white, that he is this blank slate. Like, you know, I can take whatever you're going to throw at me, cause I've gotten the worst already. And like, I love the costuming choice that the whole movie, he's all white.
I lied. My favorite scene in the movie is after the freak out, when he looks at the family and apologizes.
It's such a good moment. And, mm-hmm. and it's so easy. Like, he just walks up and he's just like, I'm really sorry. I said things and I didn't mean them. And they don't make it a big thing where they're guilting him. She just goes, that's okay. Let's go. And then just gives him a hug. And I'm like, it's so good.
I have such a huge thing about people saying thank you and people saying I'm sorry in mm-hmm. movies. I don't know why. It will make or break a movie for me. Mm-hmm. If the character does something that's like super, like, you know, like when the mentor character does something incredible for one of the other characters and they just kind of give like a nod. No, don't give them a nod. Stop. Look at them. Say, thank you for doing this for me. And then move on with the scene. It takes 5 seconds. Make the time. Mm-hmm. And it really shows me what kind of character you are.
And it also just shows the realism. I mean, in that moment, like, you know, someone who was, you know, I guess in the position that Dwayne was in, where he's now just like realizing like, okay, I didn't mean that. These people are pretty much all that I have in the entire world.
Yeah.
I don't want to lose these people.
Yeah.
And he goes up and he just openly just says, I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just so good and such a human moment and yes. a real family moment that I'm obsessed with it.
Me too.
My least favorite, if I'm going to pick a least favorite, I'm trying to be different, I guess. It's my least favorite just because it, like, hurts my heart, which is when he's watching, like, his ex-boyfriend drive away with the other guy, and he's just standing there as this just, like, heartbroken, like, you see it in his eyes
yeah.
that, like, everything is rushing back, and, like, for a second he leaves his little slushy there just to go and watch them look at him and then drive away, mm-hmm. and it's heart-wrenching. It's not even a bad moment. It just, like, it hurts me to watch that.
Yeah.
And then my favorite is absolutely, like, all of the ones you've named are fantastic moments, but my favorite is the last conversation the granddad has with Olive before he dies, which is the whole thing where she's like, you know, am I pretty? And he's like, you are absolutely beautiful, like, inside and out.
Yes.
And then she's like, you know, I don't want to be a loser. And he's like, losers are people who don't try.
Yeah.
And you're trying, so you're never going to be a loser.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that is such a good message for people to have, especially for kids to have when they're about to compete, like kids who are about to go and play a game of like baseball or soccer or whatever, they're about to go and do like a talent show where they're singing against a bunch of different people and they're terrified that they're going to mess up and they're not going to win. And it's like, it's okay if you don't win because you tried.
Right.
And that's what matters. And that's such a good message to have, even for adults, just to be like, hey, yeah, this thing's like hard to do, but like, there you go. And even that moment where he goes up to Richard and he like gives him just genuine, I don't know what's going to happen, but I'm proud of you for trying this thing. It was yes. a huge risk and it was bold that and I'm proud of you. And at first Richard's, you know, kind of an ass about it. And then he takes a moment and like takes his dad's hand and he's genuinely like, thank you.
Yes.
Just like, you know, let me stop having this wall up around myself, trying to keep my pain from my family when he's trying to be there for me. And, yes. and it was a really good moment of growth for him, especially. So that's like an honorable mention for
yeah.
me. Sure. Out of 10, oh gosh, what should it be?
Never
ice creams?
Let's go out of 10 Volkswagen buses. What would you rate Little Miss Sunshine?
I'm going to go 9 out of 10.
Yeah?
I loved it.
Yeah.
Absolutely loved it.
What do you think?
Either an 8.7 or a 9. I'll probably say 9.
Okay.
It was very, very good. Really, the only real issue that I had, surprisingly enough, was a little bit of the cinematography. I think they used real film
for well, it. They definitely did. It was also 2006, so like it's
yeah,
it's,
but they,
it's
I mean,
pretty.
They had digital.
Well, they had digital, but also think about their budget. Most of their budget went into the actors.
yeah, it's just the lighting, honestly. Just was consistently a little gross.
Yeah,
I wasn't a huge fan of the lighting. And it kind of cast this kind of aura throughout the movie that it's like, I know it's not trying to be this. It doesn't feel congruent with what I'm trying to look at. And I don't like it. So,
that's fair.
So that's the only real thing. That's the only thing that would kind of hurt the rewatchability a little bit. But outside of that, I mean, it's really strong. It doesn't waste a whole lot of time.
It could be longer, yeah. But it isn't because it's like, this is all the time that we need.
It's just a really strong, fun, funny, deep movie. It's like all the things that I like in movies. Really, really appreciated it.
I am very comfortable and very happy to give this movie a 9.9 Volkswagen
Lancers. Wow. That is high praise. Wow.
The pageantry.
That's fair.
I think it captures a very realistic family dynamic, which is hard for a lot of movies to do without, over dramatizing certain parts. I think it's a very realistic dynamic. And you mentioned the cinematography being a little gritty and kind of grainy. I like that. I think it gives it a sense of reality, like you're watching a home video. You're watching a home video. It gives me big Orange County vibes, which we've lost on the podcast. Check that episode out. But I think overall, it carry dark themes very artistically, very well, where for each dark moment they elevated it to with a comedic moment, if not during. And I love the choice of Steve Carell as Frank. I think that was just a fantastic.
There were lots of other people considered, including Robin Williams was considered for Frank.
Robin Williams could definitely.
Well, he was considered for both Frank and I think for Richard as well. But but he may have had other stuff going on. I mean, this movie for me, since first watch, has been a 10 out of 10 for me.
Yeah.
I am obsessed with it. It's beautiful. It makes you laugh. It makes you like feel things. It's so well done, and I love it. Yeah. So since we are out of time, people are about to walk in. You can follow us on Instagram and Facebook at Mad Artists Entertainment and on Twitter at artists_mad. We are in production for The Teller right now. It will be performing October 28th and 29th. So be on the lookout for that.
I don't know, I got to finish myself.
And people are coming into my house, so we've got to do things quickly. So, yes, you can visit our website for more info. If you have any comments, questions, corrections, or requests that we should review in the future, you can email us at bannerbox.madartists@gmail.com or message us on our social media. Leave a review wherever you're listening. It really helps us out. And we will see you guys next week. Bye-bye.
Blessing.